As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Strange Familiars. Welcome back, everybody. Tonight is going to be part two of my interview with Nathan from the Pennyroyal podcast. More synchronicity, more Kentucky strangeness, and all associated oddities. Before we get into part two of my interview with Nathan, if you like all the content we give you with Strange Familiars and you'd like to get more, the best way is to become a patron at Patreon, patreon.com/strangefamiliars. There's all different levels of support there, starting at $3 a month. That may go up in the new year here, so jump on that quickly. You can subscribe monthly or you can subscribe yearly. No matter what level you go in at, you get extra episodes. All of our patrons get extra episodes. There's over 60 right now. If you join, you get those 60 right away. There's also other levels of support where you get things like t-shirts, patches, stickers, and more. Check it out, patreon.com/strangefamiliars. There's monthly and yearly subscriptions now at Patreon, so you can sign up for a month at a time, or you can sign up for a whole year. There's a discount if you sign up for a year, so even better deal. Patreon.com/strangefamiliars. If you don't like the idea of a subscription like Patreon, you can make a one-time donation. Go to strangefamiliars.com, look under the show notes. For any episode, you'll see a PayPal.me link. You can click that and make a one-time donation. And of course, everyone can help by sharing the show on social media, liking and subscribing wherever you're listening, and leaving us those nice 5-star reviews, which helps get Strange Familiars in front of new potential listeners. All right, so let's get back to my interview with Nathan. We just kind of picked up where we left off, and we dig in even further.
Man, a crazy thing that's part of season two of the show, like There are a lot of non-paranormal things that obviously happened during the investigation of all this, and the continued investigation, that they're not paranormal. They're real things, like finding a Terma, but there's almost like a paranormal or supernatural layer to it, mm-hmm. right? Because it's so incredible or so synchronistic that it defies the possibility that it could actually happen, but it did, you know. And this I haven't talked about this very much on my podcast. I won't say a whole lot because there are other people involved that I've got to make sure that they're okay with me talking about it. But we received some really toward the end of producing the show, we received some documents from somebody, and they were very, very strange documents. When I got the documents, I became frightened because I didn't think I would, I didn't think I should have the documents, like, you mm-hmm. know, in an illegal sense, you right. know, like, I was like, I don't know about this. And they wanted us to data mine the documents because they'd overheard Darian and I talking about the data mining software. And it's weird how they even got to us. But we got these documents, and then when we started looking at them, they related exactly to what we were investigating. Like, exactly that. And even included people that we were investigating in the documents.
Wow.
And references that were very specific to us and here in this place, right? But they had been sealed, like, digitally sealed in 2017 before we ever even, you know, like, I'd not even, you know, I just was starting with it. And so that was a weird thing. And it turns out, too, that a person I'm researching who's tied to James Shelby Downard and trying to figure that mystery out, and because it's related to all this, a person that is connected to him actually handled the documents. So it's like a person that we're investigating in a different way ended up having contact with the documents that we ended up with that talk about what we're doing. It's weird, dude. And this weird, it boggles my mind because it's like, is someone orchestrating parts of this?
So I emailed you a little bit about something which I'm not going to talk about on the show because I told you how much it kind of... it kind of upset me and frightened me. It was a similar thing. Somebody approached me with it's a really super interesting story, but it involves an existing cult, a Christian cult, not a satanic cult, and some murders and a event from recent history in Pennsylvania. Very, very intense. And I thought about it because it's a great story. And then I just thought, man, I don't know if I want to put my name on this and then be on the radar of some of the people involved in this, because some are still around. Do you worry about that?
I didn't worry about... I've had various levels at this point, right, that have gotten... Yeah, let me say this, because I think this is a valuable thing to talk about in terms of this kind of research. You know, obviously you've encountered this, and, you know, when I first started, it was very, very... micro versus macro. It was micro on this very local level, mm-hmm. with the murders that had happened here, some of these unsolved murders. And, you know, I still have no intention of trying to solve any of that stuff. I think they know who the murderers are in some of these cases, and some things have happened that just they're not able to convict these people. I mean, Dateline came down and did a special about the two most famous murders. But, you know, I never intended to try to solve anything, so I wasn't sticking my nose, you know, into that and saying, "Hey, everybody, I'm going to figure this out." I just thought that those murders and some disappearances and some other things all seemed so strange that they were connected to possibly a larger mystical structure of sorts, mm-hmm. kind of like what they describe in the Empire of the Will series, you know, Walter Bosley and Richard Spence, because there were some murders in San Bernardino in 1914 that involved a spiritualist cult. And as Richard Spence says, it doesn't matter whether or not you believe in magic. It matters that these people do, because right. their actions are based on that, right?
Right.
So they killed these people. So I wondered, is it possible something like this happening here? But again, I was like, I don't know if I really think there's a cult. And at the end of the day, I really didn't until Greg came and tells me that Amy stuff. And that was probably the first time that I like went home and thought, am I putting myself and my family in danger by mm-hmm. looking into this, right? And we did stop after that. And then I kind of was like, there's no cult, you know? And I still don't think there's a cult. I think that a lot of crazy things cluster here, and it's easy to transcribe or interpret it in that way. Mm-hmm. And I do think the things are connected, but I don't think it's like an organization or an organized thing. I think it's more so a strange way that reality functions. But anyway, that was the first time that I was like, ooh, I don't know. Then when we got the documents, that was a whole other one that I was like, maybe this is not a good idea, you know? Mm-hmm. I was like, is the FBI going to show up, you know? And it was weird. They were just things that I just didn't think we should have our hands on. And some of the people that were mentioned in the documents are dangerous people, and they're still around. Not here, just out, you know, the part of them were in California, you know?
Right.
And I still thought, man, there's no way we're going to, you know, do anything with this. Richard Spence, you know, he is the leading expert on, he wrote the Aleister Crowley 666, or Secret Agent 666 about mm-hmm. Aleister Crowley. And he's like the preeminent U.S. expert on, you know, like spies and espionage. And he consults the U.S. Espionage Museum. Well, we talked to him about the documents, and he was just like, boys, this is an intelligence operation. There's something in these documents that someone wants to get out, but they don't want anyone to know that they're connected with it.
Oh, interesting.
And they know that you're putting this podcast out, and they're hoping you'll make this part of the story and release the documents. And I was like, what?
Wow.
And so he said, when you look at the documents, it's going to be something. He said, there'll be so much stuff in there that you think is holy shit, but it'll be that thing that you don't care about, that is the thing that they really want out there.
Oh, wow.
And so that was a weird recontest. But the fact that he also was like, oh, no, I've seen shit like this before. Huh. That I was like, what is going on, you know? So that was a whole other level of paranoia and kind of like, is this, we shouldn't be doing this kind of thing. That's part of the second season is going to be that, because ultimately that ended up being an experience that psychologically that I really want to explore and share with people, because it is weird, mm-hmm. especially when you understand the documents. But the other thing is, after the show came out, that kind of freaked me out was the contact from everyone who felt like I knew something or could help them figure out part of their journey, right? Mm-hmm. Because, you know, we had people traveling from all over the place coming here because they felt like something was happening here that could, and obviously I was telling a story that communicates that there is something special about this place. And that was a little frightening because, you know, there are some people out there that are definitely maybe not in the greatest of mental health places, you know, who feel like this story is speaking to them in new ways. And that, you know, I think you have to separate yourself from some of that, you know, and I know Greg's had to do that because, you know, the Hellier fans are awesome, but there are some people out there that are maybe way too deep in it, you know? and it's just, that was a new thing that I'd never had to deal with before, because, you know, I always try to listen to everybody's perspective. I want to hear everybody's story, but there just becomes a point at which you do have to exercise some caution and separate yourself from some of the things that, you know, might be dangerous. Yeah, I mean, those were all things that took it in a everything's been so positive and so transformative and so fulfilling to investigate this and to journey chasing this mystery. But those were the first times that it felt like there were negative ramifications.
Right, yeah.
You know, and that kind of scared me. But I don't know. I mean, it's like Chapel Perilous. You know, it's how do you navigate this, because you don't want to, we're never going to find the answers, but because if we did, the journey would stop.
Right.
And the journey is really what the mystery is.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, I'm not really looking for answers. You know, I'm looking for more roads. And so, yeah, I don't know, man. It's just been a fantastic thing to be a part of, but it's both extremely beautiful, but also very terrifying too, you know?
So let me talk to you about something that people often talk to me about. And my perspective on this has changed a little bit. I'm going to play a little bit of a devil's advocate here. So if let's say I picked you up tomorrow and threw a dart at the map of the United States and set you down in a town, you know, pick a state, say Colorado, right?
Right.
Don't you think you could find a similar story there?
Totally. Oh, yeah, yes. And it may not be the same one, but mm-hmm. I do think that, and that's what Richard Spence, you know, that's in the trailer for the podcast, you know, and he told us this great thing. He said, you know, what was happening in San Bernardino, it turns out there was something similar happening in the town that he grew up in. And that's kind of why he was open to Bosley's theory when he approached him to work with him. And he was like, it's not just San Bernardino. You know, it's not just the town he grew up in. It's not just Somerset. It's everywhere. And it's everywhere because there are these kinds of stories that if you start digging, you're going to find them. Mm-hmm. And I do believe that. I will say that I think that Somerset is on a whole other level, though.
Right. So that's where I was going. When I first started the podcast, and people were like, wow, what's going on in Pennsylvania? And I'd be like, ah, it didn't matter. I could pick me up and put me in any town, and I could find this. I'll find the weirdness there. I did an experiment. This never made the air because it was boring. Where I picked a random town. This was right at the beginning of COVID, and we were just kind of making a point, trying to make a point. And I picked a random town. I think it was in South Carolina. And I was like, all right, I'm just going to find this is going to be the new weird place. I'm going to find everything weird about this town and tell tons of stories about it and then just reveal to everybody that that's what I did. I couldn't find anything.
Really?
Yeah, like nothing. Nothing. You know, now, obviously, I don't live there. Maybe locals could, you know, tell me more. But so I've sort of adjusted my theory. And I think to an extent, yes, you can uncover the stuff. But I do think some places... Let's just put it this way. I think some places it's a lot easier to uncover. It's a lot closer to the surface, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I honestly believe that I never expected to find that this place was the center of the Kentucky anomaly, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, when you look at those maps from NASA, it's exactly the heart of that. The intensity of it is this county. And
so these are, like, magnetic anomaly maps?
It's the geomagnetic field from inside the Earth.
Okay. All right. So those are different then. Have you looked at magnetic anomaly maps? I think they're USGS
yes.
has them.
Yeah. I actually think what was weird is that when I was telling, you know, when Greg and the Hillier crew came down here, when I started telling them about the Kentucky anomaly, you know, he was like, we already found, they hadn't found the Kentucky anomaly, but they had found the magnetic anomalies. Okay. Through the mining map, because they were looking at all the mines in Kentucky, you know, mm-hmm. because of the first season.
Right.
And it all lined up on top of Somerset with the caves. And then when I told him about the Kentucky anomaly, he's like, holy shit, you're looking, you know, you found the same. The only thing about the Kentucky anomaly, though, is that the surface gravity here is totally different than the rest of the gravity on the surface of North America. Like there's an actual pocket where the gravity is different. NASA outlines.
Weird.
It's weird.
So weird, yeah.
So then it's like, are there anomalies? But on top of that, the place is extremely violent. It has this very, very, very violent history. Like, that was one of the things that just jumped out at us. But also, if you go to Eastern State up in Lexington, and I've interviewed multiple people there over this, when you mention you're from Pulaski County, the doctors, and they take people from, it's the state mental health facility. They take people from all the other counties in the state of Kentucky. 70% of the people in there are from Pulaski County. Hmm. And they always ask you, what's going on down there? Is there pollution? Is there, you know, what's happening? And is it then, you know, people have done studies and there are, you know, intense, you know, EMF and geomagnetic fields will cause higher incidences of violence. You know, they'll cause, you know, higher mental health problems. Mm-hmm. So, you know, is that part of it? But again, when you see how much, this isn't in the show either, and I think this is crazy. This is going to be in the second season, but, you know, we find out that in the 1970s, all of these magicians were coming to Somerset, coming to Pulaski County from Cincinnati and other places to perform rituals here because of the energy. And one of the groups was the Bait Cabal. I don't know if you're familiar with them. They published the Cincinnati Journal of Ceremonial Magic.
Okay.
And, you know, Marco Visconti, he's a ceremonial magician in England. He just moved from London to Somerset, England, which I think is funny.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
Because of Glastonbury. We've talked to him a lot, and he's really consulted us about magic, and he's very knowledgeable about the history, and, you know, he's a wandering bishop. He studied with Michael Berthiaud in Chicago, and he knew the Bait Cabal. He knew Nima, this woman, Mary Ingalls, who sort of founded the group in Cincinnati in the mid-1970s. Well, they were part of the Typhonian Order, and that Kenneth Grant, who was Aleister Crowley's secretary, you know, the last couple of years of his life when he lived in Netherwood. And Grant eventually became the outer head of the OTO and, you know, Telema.
I used to do artwork for their Grant's publication.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's crazy, dude. So you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Then, you know? Yeah. So Grant and Nima.
Was it called Starfire? I think it might have been called Starfire.
Oh, yeah, dude. I know what you're talking about. Yeah. Oh, that's crazy. All right. Well, so Grant and Nima talked a lot, and he really liked what she was saying. She channeled the Horus Mayotte Lodge, this whole Mayotte current, right? Mm-hmm. And it was a Typhonian current. And they all believed, like Grant, in this, like, the old ones. And it sounds so crazy. And I don't practice magic. You know, I love to research all this stuff, but, you know, I don't do any rituals. I don't do any stuff, but the history of it's what's so fascinating, the folklore of it. And I finally got my hands on all of the journals that they published in the 1970s, which was a strange thing how I got that. But anyway, Nima believed that the Hopewell, that the people that were here that built the mounds had opened up a portal to the night side of the Tree of Life, right? And had never closed it. And that's why all of this stuff spills out into this area, right? Where the Daniel Boone National Forest meets this. And but she called it the Cincinnati Vortex. Mm. But they believed that these beings, these alien intelligences, were going to come through that and destroy humanity. I mean, for real, the publications are crazy. And they're beautiful and they're wild and they have all these rituals, but they involve time magic and retrocausality.
Oh, wow.
And they were coming here in the 70s at the exact same time that Gaterma was here, at the exact same time that all kinds of this stuff was happening. And they were performing these rituals that involved time. So then it's like, have we gotten caught up in some type of eddies off of these vortexes that they created?
Right.
You know, and that's, you know, like, I couldn't even put that in the first season because I was like, what are people going to think about that? You know, and then I find out that, you know, Hellier, they talk about the Green Man cult, you know, that Amy girl in those emails. Mm-hmm. Well, I found out while I was researching all this, there is a Green Man cult here. There's a group called the Gwydonic Order that was founded in 1955 in San Francisco. And it's a Welsh magician's order. They're not Druidic. They're not Wiccan. They're somewhere in between. But it's an international group. They have chapters all over the world. In 2004, they moved their international headquarters to guess where? Somerset, Kentucky.
Wow.
And they worship the Green Man, and they worship Sunernos, the horned god, Pan. And they're here. So then it's like, did she know someone that was a part of that group? I don't think that group is here sacrificing children.
Right.
You know, I don't think there's a cult doing that. But it's weird that all of these magical groups were coming here. And even 30 minutes east of here, where Whitesburg is, right? That's where Lady Sheba reinvented Wiccan and published the Book of Shadows in 1971, like 45 minutes east of here in Daniel Boone National Forest, the same forest that connects to the mines and to the caves. That whole area where that vortex is in that same place, Wicca was reinvented. It's the other form. There's Gardnerian Wicca, and then this woman who was a Appalachian witch basically created a whole new Wiccan culture, you know. And it's this whole area is surrounded by magic. And that to me, too, was like, what does that mean? You know, take out whether or not magic's real, just the folklore and the concept that those systems and people that believe in those systems were clustering here are another layer to all of this. It all belies and just indicates that there is something here that's very special. And what it is, again, I have no idea what this is, you know? But it's like, we just keep finding this. And I do think, and I try to encourage everybody in the show to look at where they are, because, and I want to say this too, and this was sort of the, at the end of it all, the theme of the show is that right now, because of like, there's like this assault on reality, right? That nothing is real. You know, that there's fake news. You can't believe anything. You can't believe scientists. Nothing that you hear has any veracity, right? Mm-hmm. And I thought, of all the times that you could possibly live in the modern age, you know, in this age of rationality and science, right now we live in a time when anything could exist. And it's like, this is the perfect time for this re-enchantment of America and the re-enchantment of the world, is that you can believe in magic and old gods and all of these things, because suddenly now the paradigm, you know, consensus reality, there's not very much consensus anymore, you know?
Say that again. Absolutely.
So it's like, is that a part of all of this? You know, is that feeding into this phenomena? You know, and the phenomena absolutely requires us, mm-hmm, as an ingredient.
1,000%. Yeah.
You know, and that's the beauty of it. I mean, that's what excites me about all this. You know, I love stories. You know, my daughter's name is Story because I love stories so much. But it's just, it's crazy to research all this and to collect these stories and to see that it's not just a single narrative, that there seems to be this larger narrative. And I say that in terms of like a system that connects everything, you know. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But it's just, I don't know, man. It's so beautiful to discover that and to know that structure exists. And what it is, I don't think we need to know what it is. Just knowing that it's there and that it's something that we can explore.
Yeah, I think looking for one reason, like, so I wasn't that into the whole geological aspect of things. You know, people would ask me, like, you know, what is it about, you know, Pennsylvania and your area of Pennsylvania? How come you can find all this weird stuff? I don't know. And then people would, you know, for a while, people were like, oh, there's, you know, big vein of quartz that runs down through there and this and that. But then somebody sent me one of these magnetic anomaly maps of the area. And I'm looking at it. So Toad Road follows Cadores Creek. It's an old towpath for towing barges down the creek. Right down, this right on, and it's you know, as you're looking on the map, it's the south side, kind of the southeast side of the creek. Mm-hmm. This road follows up the creek. Well, so it's on that side. Basically, this magnetic anomaly just follows that right along the creek. Just follows right along there. And then I'm like, whoa, that's weird. And then I start looking at these other places. There's a place we go to where we can, you know, I can't guarantee you you'd see lights if you came with us there, but I could almost guarantee it. It happens frequently enough where it's if somebody, you know, comes to visit and wants to go see something weird, I'll take them to this place. And sure enough, magnetic anomaly just blop right on top of that place. And then this Michaux State Forest, where we've had a lot of crazy stuff. There's just a giant magnetic anomaly that reaches down from the center of the state, right down, just follows, Michaux State Forest kind of runs north to south, kind of follows the Appalachian Trail down, or the Appalachian Trail follows it either way. But it just, this magnetic anomaly just reaches right down, you know, basically follows the Michaux Forest. And I'm, you know, I have to take a step back and go, whoa, like, is there something to this? Or is that, I don't know how it would matter necessarily, but it's there, you know.
That's so weird, man. And I mean, I do think that plays a part in this somehow. But then that's what Pennyroyal. That's what I started out wanting to answer with the question. And, you know, the tagline for the show is the magic and mystery of place, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I really wanted to understand, you know, is it the people that defines a place, or is it a place that, you know, redefines the people? And I know it's kind of a chicken or egg situation, but I was really interested in exploring that question because I think that's really where folklore emerges, but in that sort of relationship, you know, between people and a place.
Right.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
And you just find that certain places are, the people in the place are so entwined with each other that there is, you know, so much of what we're looking at is non-physical, right? It just is for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, you know, concrete reality, but it still exists. But when you talk about physical places having an effect, I mean, Somerset, you know, it really is this place that has this geophysical anomaly. But it seems to be interacting or having an effect on a psychological or a noumenal or an astral element of everything too, you know?
Right.
I don't know. It's weird. It's weird how that – and have you ever heard the stories of well, you brought up the magnetic stuff – I think it's in the Hudson River Valley. God, what's the writer's name? It's he talks about seeing robed figures all the time. It's the magnetic East Magnet. It's like North Magnetic Road and South Magnetic Road.
Okay.
And there were these. I think it's Brewster, New York. God, I cannot remember the guy's name. He's a really famous researcher. But in that area of the Hudson River Valley, there's a town that had all these tunnels underneath it, right? Because there were mines underneath the town, and they were mining this magnetic ore, and there's tons of weird, like, portal activity, and, you know, seeing these robed figures. Then it's like, you know, here too there are these types of anomalies, and people always report robed figures. And of course you immediately want to say it's Satanists or even cults or whatever, but right. what if it is something else? What if the people that see the robed figures in cemeteries, you know, there are all those reports, and it's like they pass in and out of reality, and that certain places are gateways, and you just wonder if we've got it all wrong, you know, that there are robed figures but they're not terrestrial, you know, mm-hmm. or they're not even extraterrestrial, but they're just not, you know, they're not human intelligences, you know. I don't know, but
yeah,
I think things like that, those are weird connections where it's like that doesn't fit in any of the other boxes, which to me means it's more significant and more connected mm-hmm. than the things that we're seeing all the time. So
we have gotten a number of hooded figure stories as well, like just people just seeing weird hooded figures and stuff. And yeah, I don't know if it's the whole see the. And I wonder this, too, with the witnesses you've talked to. There was a definite power in the satanic panic, you know?
Oh, and, for sure, man.
And, yeah. and did that in the way, in the same way we're talking about these other things, sort of influencing people, did that influence those people, you know, to whatever happened? Like you said, I think something happened to that woman that you interviewed. You know, I don't... It's not that I doubt her stories, but... Man, if people are just sacrificing kids left and right, I mean, that's, you know, you'd think somebody somewhere would have some information on that.
That was my question. You know, I was like, you know, they, you know, as many kids as we're talking about, they're killing, you know, sacrificing. And, you know, and she talked about chopping up body parts and dumping them into the mine, you know, and all this stuff. It's like, you should be able to go there and find those body parts, you know,
right.
and if it was that many kids and all these things, I'm not saying that it doesn't happen. I mean, definitely in the show we talk about the finders, and that really, that's a real thing that I'd never heard of until the remote viewer that we were interviewing brought it up. And about, you know, that whole case where, you know, those guys, well, I think that's in like the fifth episode. You've probably not listened to that part yet, but it's like, you know, these people had some kids in Florida, and these two guys, and when the cops arrested them, they found out it was a cult called the Finders, and it looked like they were involved in child trafficking and all this, like, super strange stuff. They had computers and fax machines. There's all these FBI reports. Peter LaVenda was one of the first people to write about it in his Sinister Forces, the first book, right? And then everybody was like, y'all, you're crazy, because he said... They're tied to the CIA. It's a front for the CIA. Well, they released the documents. I, again, didn't know this until the remote viewer we were interviewing told us in the interview. They're like, look it up. It's on FBI's website. There's like 400 pages. They just declassified it 3 months ago. And right then, everybody in the room that's part of the interview, they all hop on their phones, and I look over my shoulder, you know, at the mixing board, and they're all looking at me like, oh, my God, dude. And there they were. There it was. And the CIA came in and stopped the FBI from investigating this cult because they said it was an internal intelligence affair.
Wow.
Right? So then it's – and they were stopping – when you read the documents, they were stopping in Berea 15 minutes from Somerset.
Hmm.
Right? On their – so they came from like Chicago – to Berea, and they stopped in Kentucky. There's a lot of stuff about Kentucky, and then went to Florida, and then said they were taking the kids to a school for the gifted in Mexico. But they were released. The CIA forced the FBI to release them, and then they vanished.
Hmm.
It's but that kind of stuff too. It's like what is going on, man?
Yeah.
You know, like that's a strange thing. I don't know, man. Just the mystery of it all is so weird. Just
yeah.
all the strands, you know? Not even the paranormal stuff. That's not even paranormal.
Right, right.
You know? But you're right, though. Like, did that feed things like that, which are real? And even the Epstein stuff, you know, which we know, like, you know, that kind of trafficking and stuff. Mm-hmm. All of that stuff that even the weird QAnon stuff, right? And the Pizzagate stuff, which... All that stuff, you know, kind of terrifies me too, because we do talk about, you know, child sacrifice in the show and what appears, you know, and we talk about the finders. You know, and I was very afraid that I didn't want anyone to latch on to the show and think that that's what it was about.
Right, you know? Right.
And so that was a fear of mine because it was like I was researching this way before any of that stuff even came to be an issue. And then suddenly it's like, are extremists going to champion this? Because I don't want that situation.
Right, yeah, definitely, yeah.
But I'm saying, because all of that's welled up in the popular consciousness, is it reverberating backwards retrocausally to the late 80s, you know, to the early 90s? And like you said, is that, you know, everybody that at that time that were like, there are cults everywhere. Right. They're snatching blue-eyed children who were blonde, you know. And it's like, were they receiving a signal? You know, because this is the thing, too. We don't know that when we broadcast radio and TV signals and now digital signals, we think of them as only propagating in space forwards in time, right? But what if they go out in every direction, even backwards in time?
Right, yeah.
You know? And so what if – and that's the thing, too. It's like all these things that were happening in the 70s and that were causing people to come here, maybe telling this story so many times and broadcasting it out there and talking and having this conversation so many times and it being in people's consciousness is broadcasting it backwards so that people in the 1970s were seeing witch cults. And these magicians were drawn here, and they didn't know why, and it felt really mystical. But really, they were just picking up on some broadcast from 40 years in the future, 50 years in the future.
Wow. You know? Yeah, that's...
I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, well, we can leave it with I don't knows. Before we go, I have to ask you, are you familiar with the Belva Mine disaster?
I don't think so.
So this was mine disaster December 20. I'm looking at the date here. I can't see it. Hold on. I think it's 28th. I don't think it was Christmas Day. I think it was 28th, 1945. Belva Mine. It was in Pineville, Kentucky.
Oh, is this the one where the doorway opens?
Yeah.
In the mine?
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
And you know how they describe the guy that walked through the door?
He had a flannel shirt on.
Yeah, he was dressed like a lumberjack.
He was dressed like a lumberjack. Yeah. Yeah. And he was like, don't worry, guys. You're going to be saved.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then he went back through the door of light.
Yeah. Yeah. Amazing. One of the earliest Flannel Man accounts that I've collected.
I forgot that it was a Flannel Man. That's so crazy, dude. I mean, think about that, too. That's Pineville. That's not that far away from here. You know? It's just east.
I should put you to work because... Barton not only has it in his book, The Inhumanoids,
yes. Yeah.
And
yeah.
I can't source the original. I've looked for the original newspaper articles, and I can't because the articles appeared in 82, and I just can't find them. I can't find the original articles, so I'd love to find get the original articles from whichever paper. It just said issues of the Pineville, Kentucky, and other newspapers, he says. So.
I'll do some digging, man. I'll see about because maybe I can make a trip over there and see if I can find some. Where are you located at? You're in Pennsylvania?
Yeah, York County, right. So South Central.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. It's not easy for you to pop down here.
No. Although I have to make when COVID's over, I'm doing a paranormal road trip and I'm going to hit a bunch of places because there's so many places we want to go and places we've been invited and stuff and we just got to dig in.
Definitely hit Somerset, man. Come down here.
I'd love to. I'd absolutely love to. You can give me a tour. Show me the weird stuff.
Oh, yeah. I'll take you out to the mine. It's really crazy. Can I tell you one real quick thing, too?
Yeah.
One of the craziest things, and I've told this a couple of times, but one of the craziest experiences of the whole thing, and not paranormal, but when I shot the trailer for the show, I hadn't been to the mine. I'd never been out there. I was kind of scared to go to it just because it had become such a terrifying psychological place in the story. But I was like, you know, I can't put this show out without physically going there and saying I was there. And so I really wanted to build a monument that sort of symbolized this this idea of it being that a place that we sort of created, you know, that was just a hole in the ground that no one cares about any of this stuff until now. Right. And now people will care, you know, now people will want to go see the place. But at the time I was like, you know, I work, you know, with Dan Dutton a lot, the artist, and I was like, man, we should build this mirror obelisk because I'd seen all these photographers do this thing where they would do like a square of mirrors and like drop it in the forest.
Oh yeah, it looks amazing. Vanish. Yeah, I've seen
some. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I was like, let's build a 6 foot tall pyramid, you know, like an obelisk of mirrors, and then let's take it to the mine. And I will take this shortwave broadcaster with a solar panel, and I'll make this signal, and we'll take it there and we'll turn it on. And I was like, that'll be part of the beginning of the show and the end of the show, because in a way it was like a metaphor, I felt, and I still feel that way, that it's a metaphor that we were picking up on some signal, mm-hmm. you know, some transmission. And that's what the story was. And so I was like, let's go out there. I created this beacon signal, and I said, let's take a group of people. We'll go out there. We'll huff this thing a mile and a half into the woods to the mine. We'll leave it, turn on the signal. That'll be the end of the production. And then I'll shoot this trailer. And I brought these purple robes for everybody. Okay. So we drive out there. It's like 20 miles in the middle of nowhere that you have to drive to this place on this one lane road. And so we get out there. Everybody's in like purple robes because we're going to shoot this trailer, because I wanted to have like the, you know, the scene of like a cult driving upon a cult, you know, with the audio playing. And so we take this pyramid out there, and there were probably like 20 people, and we hike into the woods carrying this pyramid dressed in purple robes, right? And I filmed a lot of it and shot photos and stuff. And then I recorded the end of the podcast where we turned the signal on, the beacon. And then I was going to leave it. And then I got worried about the legal issues of telling everyone that I had put a beacon out there and that they should find it. And it's this dangerous mining area.
Right.
I was like, someone's going to die. I'm going to get sued. So then I was like, all right. Let's take the thing back. We'll put it in Kyle's paranormal museum, you know. So then we carry the thing out. So we get up to the top of the hill. All these people are in purple robes. There's a 6 foot tall, you know, mirror pyramid. And all of a sudden I see headlights coming. And I'm like, what? What in the world? You know, we're like 20 miles in the middle of nowhere. There's headlights. So this truck drives up. And I'm like, oh, my God. All these people, we look like a cult. In the woods. So the guy drives past us and he turns around, he pulls up, he stops, he gets out, and he's like, there's a snake nest over there. And what happened to Steven Snyder, we were driving my car to film this, and I had to sit in the back with the camera, and someone else had to drive my vehicle, and he had accidentally driven it over part of a cliff into the woods, and they were trying to get it unstuck between these two trees, right? Mm-hmm. And that's when this guy had driven up. And so he's like telling us where we are, trying to get the truck unstuck, that there's snake nests. And I had a Marine with us who's Josh Van Hook, who opens the show. You know, he has the adventure guide company.
Okay.
And he's got weapons on. He's got a pistol, you know. And he and another guy were like, you know, getting all swole up that this guy you know is over here telling us, you know, about these snakes. And I'm trying to calm them down because they're like, I'll shoot that man, I'll shoot him, dude, you know. And I'm like, chill out. And I'm telling the guy, I'm like, because I'm freaking out because everyone standing around on the side of the road are in purple robes, right? And there's this pyramid, and I'm like, oh God. And I'm not, you know, I'm totally fine. And so I'm telling the guy, I'm like, hey man, we're all good. And I said, we're going to get a tow truck, whatever. It's cool. We're good. Thanks for checking on us. And he says, I got all kinds of snakes. Come here. I catch snakes for the churches. And he takes me over the back of his truck, and he has all these plastic tubs, and he opens it up, and there's hundreds of snakes in there. Wow. In the back of his truck, right? And I finally convinced the guy to leave. But Dan Dutton, you know, that's in the fourth episode, and all the Pan stuff is connected to him. He was this famous artist. He's like, Nathan, do you realize that it was like we were performing a ritual? Everybody's in robes. They carry this pyramid down to the damn mine. They carry the thing out of there, and it's this, like, ordeal, you know, where everybody's like trying to pass the thing off. It's like carrying a cross, you know, through the woods. And then a snake handler shows up And he was like, I thought the devil was going to show up after that. He was like, I thought we were summoning the devil. And it was funny because it's like, it was, we had become the cult that we were.
Right.
I think Greg even talks about the fact that, you know, when they were doing the Hellier ritual, you know, it was like he was worried about them running into Satanists, you know, in the caves. And it's like they were the ones that were actually trying to summon the devil. You know?
Right.
And for us, it was the same thing. It was like, here we are looking for this cult at this mine. And then we're the ones that are all dressed up as the cult. And then it's like, is that what some people picked up on in the early 90s, or, you know, back, you know, they have these memories, were they actually seeing us?
Like another time loop, yeah.
Yeah, you know, and that was probably one of the strangest things that happened. Dan thought I should have, like, really engaged with the snake handler and invited him over and, like, really brought him into the story. He was like, you missed an incredible artistic moment, Nathan. Next time it presents itself, you need to embrace it. But I was afraid that they were going to shoot the guy. You know, I was like, oh, God, this could go really bad, you know.
Right.
So I just needed to get him out of there. And luckily we were able to shoot the trailer and everybody got home safely. But wow. it was definitely a crazy ending to the production, you know.
It's been a good, you know, minute since my Kenneth Grant years, but there was stuff with, like, there was the Typhonian current, and I forget if it was a separate current or if it was part of that. I think it was part of that was like the Ophidian stuff, the stuff with snakes.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah. So, and that's what part of the Bait Cabal stuff involves, clipothic forces.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think those are all part of the Ophidian current.
Okay,
yeah. It's strange.
So yeah, oh, that's wild. That's really wild. Well, when can we expect season two?
Currently, my plan is we're working on it right now. I mean, it never stopped. You know, that's what I told somebody. I was like, even if we didn't put this thing out, this would still continue. You know,
right.
I'm still researching.
You're
this,
in you it know, now. Cool. Yeah.
You know, but I'm hoping that by summer of next year that I'll have everything, because it's weird. You know, it's like we really finished it up right down to the line the first season. But it wouldn't have been what it was if it hadn't happened when it did. You know, my wife's like, why didn't you have this done like 4 months before you released it? And it's like, because it's a real story and there were things happening all the way up until the end that were changing the story, you know,
right.
That were adding to the story. And it's like, you know, I want to have this done for next fall, but it's like, and I will. I mean, it'll be next summer, next fall when we release the second season, but it's like, I can't wait to see what happens between now and then, you know, because I know what the second season, I have an outline and we've already started interviewing people and filling in the pieces of that outline, but I know that it's going to change, mm-hmm. You know,
absolutely.
It changed at the last minute on the first season. You know?
Yeah, no doubt it's going to change. I mean, it always does. If you're true to it, it's going to change. I mean, look at Hellier. It went from, you know, hunting goblins to, you know, whatever it became.
Yeah. And but that's, again, that's part of the beauty of this, you mm-hmm. know, and I think we're lucky to be I feel very lucky and blessed and just like this is one of those stories that if you're a storyteller, if you're someone that collects stories that you look for your entire life, you know? And it was like, we found that story and we've become part of that story. And that's, you know, whether anything's paranormal or not paranormal, or anything weird's happening, it's just an amazing thing to be a part of that and to get to tell that story.
Absolutely. You know? Absolutely. Where can people find Pennyroyal?
We're on all the platforms. You know, we're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, go to the website. I think it looks the most beautiful on Spotify. I think they've done a really good job of marrying the colors and the themes. But yeah, so we're on all the platforms or the website. I do want to say that, you know, it's always been my intention and we've made it happen, but to provide all of our research for people to interact with, you know, all the articles we found, all the software that we've developed, and put that out there. And so We've got a Patreon. You know, if you look up Pennyroyal or the Liminal Lodge, we've got a Patreon and this secret Facebook group that attached to it that it's growing, and it's a really it was way more successful than I thought it would be, because once we started posting the research, everybody just dug into it, and it's like every day people are showing me stuff that we would never. And that's the thing. It's like we found so much stuff we can't possibly go through all of it, mm-hmm. and the software helps, but like you need other people. And part of it too is this experiment of, if we add more observers to this, is that going to change this in a way, this information structure? And so anyway, if anybody's interested in like digging into, you know, the investigation and becoming a part of it, check out the Patreon and just see what we're doing, because it's become a whole other thing by itself, and it's a very rich community of people trying to access this mystery. You know,
podcast is excellent. Production quality is fantastic. Sounds great.
Thanks man.
It's really awesome. It's a pleasure to listen to, and I feel like a chump for not having started it sooner. I'm on board now. I can't wait for the to finish up the first season and get to the second. Although I might slow down so I have it a little bit longer if it's going to be a while before the second season. So what is what's your website and Patreon? You can go ahead and give them.
Pennyroyalpodcast.com, and then I think it's patreon.com/pennyroyal.
All right, are
those? But yeah, check it out. If anybody has questions, just email me, because I'm very, you know, I'm highly responsive to all these stories. If you have stories, I definitely want to hear them. So,
very cool, Nathan. Thank you so much for coming on Strange Familiars,
dude. Thank you so much for having me. Seriously.
Allison,
mm-hmm.
Say you had a puppy.
Yeah.
And your puppy was having problems with mouthing and biting.
That seems like it could definitely happen.
Where would you go for help?
I would say probably 90 days to the perfect puppy.
Absolutely. Now, if your puppy had problems with fear and nervousness or barking, where would you go for help?
This seems very likely, because it would be my puppy, and he would have already mirrored my tendencies.
Your neurosis.
My neuroses. But there's help for the puppy at 90 days for the perfect puppy.
Now, what if your puppy needed help with hyperactivity issues, leash training, or just about anything else? Where would you go?
I would go to Tina at 90 days of the perfect puppy.
That would be a correct choice.
Mm-hmm.
Because 90 days of the perfect puppy can help you with their relationship-based approach to training. They help you and your puppy become perfect for each other. Of course, 90 Days to the Perfect Puppy has online sources. They've got video lessons. They've got a secret Facebook group where you can interact with other puppy owners who may be having similar issues to you're having. So you can get help from other puppy owners. And of course, there's one-on-one options with Tina and her staff as well.
I've witnessed some of these via video where she's interacting with people and who are learning mm-hmm. in person. And she has such a calm demeanor, and it's just like just someone who knows how to do this.
Absolutely. She's 100% a professional.
Not like me, who would just start screaming, "Why are you ruining everything?"
So no matter what your problems with your puppy, or even if you just want a little help training your puppy,
couple, you know, pointers to start off.
Go to sithappens.us, look for the 90 Days to the Perfect Puppy link at the top of the page. 90 Days to the Perfect Puppy can help you and your puppy become perfect for each other. Again, that's sithappens.us. Look for the 90 Days to the Perfect Puppy link at the top of the page. So we already did Photo of the Week this week in the previous Nathan episode. For those who didn't see it, go to the show notes under that episode. It's a cool cabinet card of a painting. You can find it in our Etsy shop as well. Shop name Lost Grave, one word, or if you look up Strange Familiars, you can find us. You'll see our stuff when you look up Strange Familiars. As I mentioned last time, I added some new original art this week. Check it out. I don't know at this time what's left, because we're recording this.
Before the fact.
Yeah, before the fact. But if you go there, you should find some original artwork by me. All of my books, including Where the Footprints End, Volume 2, and including apparitions, illustrations of the other, my art book. But all of my books are on Etsy. Anytime you order any of those from us on Etsy, they do come signed automatically. You don't even have to ask. I sign everything that gets out of here.
Sometimes even with your name.
Now people are like, what is he saying? I always sign with my name. And if you buy our books from Riverbend Comics, they come signed as well, because John is local to us and he's nice enough to carry our books. So I make sure to sign every copy I give to John and Sam at Riverbend. You can check out riverbendcomics.com as well. If you're on Etsy, make sure to check out Chad's new shop, Ruck Rabbit Outdoors. He's got all kinds of outdoorsy stuff. Ruck Rabbit t-shirts and patches and knives and woolen clothes and stuff like that. Check it out, Ruck Rabbit Outdoors. And then, of course, our friends at Karmic Garden are on Etsy as well with their Flannel Man and Strange Familiar scents. They have hand sanitizers and soaps and lotions, you name it. Go ahead and check them out. Karmic Garden, one word, is their shop name on Etsy. Well, that's it for now. We'll be back very soon with another episode of Strange Familiars. Strange Familiars is a production of Dark Holler Arts. Music, books, art, podcasts, and more. DarkHollerArts.com. Intro and background music is by Stone Breath. Go to stonebreath.bandcamp.com for more. We're on Facebook, facebook.com/strangefamiliars, where you can join the Strange Familiars Gathering Group. And we're on Instagram, @strangefamiliars.
time gone. Drink under the moon with me, my friend. Alice is a long time gone. Listen to the owl so far away. Alice is a long time.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.